As you imagine, I like getting things over with very quickly. This is the, I suppose, the second poem I'd published, and 20 years between both. So in last month's edition of The Honest Ulsterman, you'll find this one. It's called Daisies and Butterflies. It's about my four-year-old son. And he's got a speech impediment. So that's the context. That's the Basel exposition I'll give you. Look, Dad, they're pinned too. And so they were. Daisy White, the compulsory yellow carpel, and, from this spring apparently, a pink frill on their petals. My four-year-old amateur botanist made his observations like Bellamy on the Bellis Perennis, from a plunge face first into the flowers, spreading the butterfly wings and dandelion spores skyward. As he rippled his hands through the grasses to get a closer look at the pint petals. But your peers are equally observant, unfortunately. They've already teased you in the playground about the pink sport shoes that were passed down by your six-year-old sister, thankfully supplanting plosive consonants. The k, the t is not a topic for tormenting in the kindergarten class. My son, your sound is as uniquely you as your smell. When damp-haired from night sweat and slumber, I plant a goodnight kiss on your forehead, inhale your scent, and nourish my fatherly love through another of the senses. My son, for you I change the consonants as easily as those second-hand sneakers, condemning the k to a dart torner of the throat. And wouldn't we all sound like poets then? Our verbs would turn hunter-gatherers into farmers. To kill would be to till. Our nouns would till fear. The shark would be a mere shark. Our adjectives would become something useful too. Cool would be a tool. A tool, tool to till. The future wouldn't be black, but blat. And with pint dawns at that. And we get softer blows. Oh, blows to our bones from stits and stones. The passings of the seasons will reveal all as nature unfurls everything on this May Day. So for now, I'll let you luxuriate in your own lexicon of spring amongst the daisies and butterflies and the odd tatterpillar.
Next up, we'll have Philip Spillane, please.
So it's based off a painting by Picasso. As many during his Blue Period, as many of Picasso's paintings, it was a recycled canvas. So it's called The Guitarist, but right behind the guitarist, like if you use like, I don't know, infrared or something, there's actually a hidden painting of a woman and a child. And this kind of triggered that poem. I think Picasso's Blue Period is most inspiring. It's a very depressing age of his life. The Guitarist. Oil paint shrouds the past of a mother and son. Picasso blue and abyss black. Coats a homeless, shameful outcast. Jack Frost skin in his navy letters, and oil on a dead canvas. His bone fingers trail on the board of a beige guitar, a memory of yesterday's folk song. Although gay, the melancholy blue invades. Thanks.
Thanks, Philip. And now we'll have Ed Dwyer, please.
O'Dwyer.
Commandant Treaty.
Commandant fucking Treaty is right. We've a few fathers in the room, I know, so I always like to read this one for the fathers. An act of fatherhood. It starts with a beautiful, heartwarming image. A man holds his infant child to his chest, bobs and rocks the child there gently, rhythmically. No one would doubt that this was soothing. The sun is shining and the caretakers have done a wonderful job in getting the park looking so well for the summer months ahead. He is only one of many out with a baby. There are also many with dogs and many sprawled on blankets reading books and many on benches eating packed lunches. When he begins to toss the infant ever so slightly into the air, it appears that it should be less soothing, but still no tears come and indicate distress. Soon, as his throes build gradually in force, until his baby is flying several feet up into the air, there is a crowd forming around the scene. He expertly tosses his child higher and higher and, just as expertly, catches it on its way down. He doesn't seem to notice the crowd forming at all, just carries on obliviously in this act of fatherhood. Dozens of mobile phones are held aloft, taking pictures, recording videos, the possibility of something that might go viral on the internet. He could very well be an Olympic gold medalist at the shot put or hammer toss. So impressive is the strength with which he is able to fling his baby towards the sky and then catch it again as gravity sends it hurtling back down. By all appearances, the baby is still soothed. No wails of discomfort or fear leaving its lips, though it must be reaching as high as 20 feet. By this point, it seems everyone in the park has joined the vast circle around him and his baby. When he miscalculates ever so slightly, missing the catch, he looks immediately horrified, devastated. Everyone around has heard the sickening thud of baby hitting concrete, seen the little bounce before falling still, a mess of small limbs. He kneels down, panic-stricken, tends to the bundle while the crowd watches on, collectively paralyzed, seemingly unable to believe what has happened is real, all the while their hands still in the air and their videos still recording. As red liquid moves slowly outwards from the baby, covering the surrounding concrete, several bodies slump to the ground, losing consciousness, while one woman ejects a stream of projectile vomit into the grass. At this, the infant's father gets back to his feet, turns to face the crowd with a wave and a smile, takes a deep bow, and another, and another, and another. The four main compass points. Then he scoops up his blood-soaked child and begins waving its inanimate hand in gratitude towards the audience. Thank you.
Thank you, I think. Jack Shortland, lots of light in the spirits now.
Sorry, guys, I won't be light in the spirits. This is one of my very short poems, and the older I'm getting, the more I'm seeing that life the way I learned it first. So I'm kind of been writing a few things just the way I learned about life first. And this, unfortunately, is called Undead and Dying. I'm going back, but we haven't done. Choose another. Anyway, dying is the plant that needs watering and relocating to the bathroom or a windowsill, a more nourishing spot. Dying is not dead. Dead is a rotting mouse back of the cooker. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jack. And now we have Stephen Roach. I can read, I swear.
Right, so I'll give you a choice. One about winter, one about loved, and one about the potatoes, the killers of Ireland.
Do the dogs one.
Okay.
Do the unhappiest one.
Well, this is kind of a weird one, but kind of funny. Potatoes, the killers of Ireland. On a day on the farm, you thought you were safe from harm. But something falls from the storage above. Yes, it's ever so deadly. Irish spud. You think everything's so safe, when all of a sudden you get a slap, a mash in the face. You thought wrong, nothing is safe from these killer Irish potatoes. It gets even worse when you're about to open your potatoes and they burst, ready to give you indigestion and merciful thirst. These savoury fuckers won't be long taking you down. The killer potatoes are in town. It's a night in the town and the smell of grease is around. You better be careful at this party. These dirty chips will clog at your arteries. There is no escape from these deadly tates. We think everything is all said and done, and you head off to bed to rest your sleepy head. You wake half dazed, only to notice the floor is glazed with a deadly rampage of gravy dripping baked potatoes, all homemade. Well, it has to be said, no matter what, you better be careful of these deadly Irish tater tots. I hope you'll rest well in bed tonight. Where's the hell that may escape our killers of Ireland, the potatoes? Quick, go warn your mates. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. And Charles Clark, is he in the room?
Hotel Banfrey, the title. Mrs. Bernard Shaw told a friend of hers that there was no middle class in Ireland. Right. From the street entrance on a damp day, the hall with its welcoming fire has an Edwardian air. You notice this Shakespearean prince of Lady Macbeth bought to crown herself, one of the Henrys, and Cymbeline. Nothing had changed forever for years in a town where nothing had changed forever for years. Entering the hotel bar from the yard, you met the Protestant barmaid of the famous Irish language poem. Literature is everywhere in Ireland. And upstairs in the old dining room, after Sunday Mass, my uncle discussed the sermon.
Thanks, Charles, and now we have Patricia Walsh.
The title of this poem is Latin. It says, thank you. Noli me tangere means don't come near me in Latin. Minister of functions cloud the night, desecrating rest days at a point of law. A healthy association rubs off in spite. City of hellfire for the most minor. Changing workloads to save the photographs. Surreptitious tears introduced by fate. Infinite poison coffee, unsweetened. A throat to the moment, good-looking machine. An awkward passage through classic actions. Perfection in style and makeup, falling aside. Favoured me, not failing enough. Unless, kisses scattered were now returned. Joys of the blood will cascade like paper. Rubbish I'd never been, when told disgust. Typed on the hoof with scathing reviews. The ignorant ruled world, marred by effort. Walking all day and night, avoiding censure. Spotting the true joke in all its glory. So much for analytical, God forbid. You're getting touched in any shape or form. Kissing for necessity in the ways not to leave your lover. Some drunken affection, an opportune act. Belong to Caesar, though you seem tame. Distant marriage at the end of the world. Thank you.
And now we have Jamie Lanton. Layton?
Lawton.
I wrote this as kind of like a song, so bear with me on the word choices. Use it or you lose it, that's the truth in terms of music. But if I'm not letting loose, I have no muse, how can I use it? See, I can't pick and choose it when I have creative juices. So if I've not blown a fuse, then it's usually useless, fruitless. Soon I have to move on, hope I'm moody later, come back to it then and write a new song. Who's wrong? The writer who expresses what he's not feeling, or the writer who only writes when he's reeling and he's bouncing off the ceiling? I use this pen and paper for healing, so if I'm not keeling over, then my lyrics have no meaning, not worth hearing, less I'm screaming, less I'm battling my demons, and when I'm regaining reason, my creative mind is freezing. Thank you.
Thanks, and now we'll have Sylvia de la Fuente.
That's why my surname sounds so weird. So I wrote a poem about Ireland, okay? So it's called Home Wet Home. I really, really like Ireland, but as I am from Spain, there's one thing I can't stand, and that is the rain. One thing I like is the colors, the blooming flowers and the trees, the houses and all the rabbits, always surrounded by green. There are really nice potatoes and even better milk. But if I had to choose, I'd pick the butter, which is as smooth as silk. There's no mosquitoes or snakes, in spite of being an island, so let's say thank you to Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland. There are so many great Irish writers. Celtic music floats all over the space, because in Ireland, every artist will find, with no doubt, his place. For those reasons and many others, I will feel sad when I'm gone. Because somewhere in my Spanish heart, I think of Ireland as my wet home.
Thank you, Sylvia. And now we have Julie Boone.
Short one. A dark one and a light one, so I'll start with the dark one. Some. One part sleeping, presumably dormant. One part cocooned, expected to evolve. One part decaying, letting go. One part thirsty, reminded to quench. One part sad, understandable. One part grateful, should be more parts. One part sexy, should be more sex. One part spiritual, o mani pemehum. One part angry, understandable. One part unforgiving, learning. One part academic, learning. One part daughter, one part sister. One part mother, one part friend. One part secret, one part dark, one part neglected. One part moon, one part tidal. One part fierce, one part mindful. All parts connected, all parts equal. Good morning. So if I do writing workshop with kids, I usually do read this poem for them. It's alphabetical. It's about kids, but then I get them to write a similar thing about adults. So it's very interesting what they come up with. So A, awesome. B, bum rhymes with awesome. C, copycats, Friday test. D, distracted quite easily. E, energetic. F, farts. G, giggle at farts. H, homework. I, iPad. J, jelly and ice cream. K, knickerbocker glory, has knickers in it. L, lost library books. M, Minecraft. N, ninjas. O, open-minded, open-hearted. P, pains in their stomachs at bedtime. Q, questions about life at bedtime. Or read me one more story, please. S, selective hearing. T, toilet humour. U, unhygienic. V, versatile. W, waffles. X, what kid doesn't love a xylophone? Y, YouTubers. Z, zest from home.
Thanks, Julie. Now we have Ray Hanrahan.
This is called Fake Futures. It's always better to forget all those promises of Jan tomorrow, for they mean nothing in the here and now, counterfeit pledges to starving man. Why should pleasure be postponed? For discipline is not human nature, but an imposition on the basic being, a concession to imperfection.
Thanks, Ray. Now we'll have Max Creedon, please.
Okay, because it's Cork and Coventry, I said the Cork Sound Deirdre wrote a poem called The Lee and Reflections on it. She did a lovely photograph of it. So I did a song kind of based on that, do a double rap. But I have three lines of a song tied in my mind, Lynn Hansard's beautiful theme song he wrote at Camino. So I remember three lines that I tied in from the ocean into the river Lee. I can cobble it together, the car just though. Say farewell to the long cold winter, and farewell to those we leave behind. From far away on the dark black ocean, and to this river in its silver thread we'll find.
So when you do for poor Rob?
Happy sparkling River Lee, you reflect everything that we see, is endless possibility in the secrets that you keep. I see reflect the electric bar reflecting there. It's blue and white and it shines on the meniscus. Each key cooperates to tell its tale. We must listen carefully to each whisper. And the swan is gliding slowly and alone. It won't seek another mate again forever. All it leaves behind is wavelets in its wake. It forms part of orchestra plays only she's music for tonight. The viola's tenderly rehearsing for its gala on this water music night. Happy sparkling River Lee, you reflect everything that we see. There's endless possibility in the secrets that
Thank you, Max. And now we have Stanley Nash.
So I wasn't sure what I was going to do with Meg's, made my mind up, seeing as she's done a song about Cork. I'm going to do a poem that I wrote when I was heading to Coventry last year. I could give you the long introduction, I'm going to keep it short. It's written using the song titles of the two-tone artists. It's called Spirit of 79. every Friday night and Saturday morning when the young at heart come together to twist and crawl out on the streets, this dirty old town drowns in hairspray, blank expressions, bright lights and alcohol, the soul salvation of the young, the black and the gifted. At 4 a.m. Jeanette, a skinhead girl, she's going, they're all out to get you, they're all out to get you, while bad boys make monkey man noises, their requiem for a black soul over and over again. Why, you're wondering now, does this concrete jungle do nothing but drop pressure to get a job on the rat race? Why, you're wondering, is freeing Nelson Mandela on the radio? Why does the government man believe our land of hope and glory can promise this ghost town better must come? When the dawning of a new era is such a long shot, when every day the young, the black and the gifted hear the mirror in the bathroom whisper, I can't stand it, they're selling out your future, and prospects are mere calling cards of the government whose overture of it's up to you to get a job. What that is an embarrassment when a house has no money and tomorrow's dream is forever one step beyond, tomorrow being just another grey day. So shut up, Mr. Government Man. You don't know, like I know, that in the middle of the night, the shadow of fear is the only noise in this world. How the doors of my heart tighten up when the whine and grind of facing situations too much for one too young tells me my dream is in deep water. How when dawn arrives, I get busy doing nothing every day. Saturday night, Sunday morning, the lonely crowd on the streets again. This, believe me, is their dream. Running away from the everyday with a night on the tiles. Running away from situations too much for one too young. Running away from the madness of the mirror in the bathroom whispering, I can't stand it, I can't stand it, I can't stand it.
Thanks, Stan. And now we'll have Metal White, please.
Hi, okay, this is something I wrote yesterday and I don't know if it's finished. There's so much more I actually want to say about this poem or on this topic, and I just really tried to kind of pare it back and keep it really minimal. And I mean, there's a title and a quote that goes with it. I'm kind of hoping of saying enough of what I want to say that I don't need to actually say it in the poem. But I haven't figured out yet whether that works. So if it doesn't work, then sorry, it might still change, but this is how it is so far. It's called Dominion. And the quote is from the Bible, you probably recognize it. Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Be masters of the fish of the sea, the birds of heaven, and all living creatures that move on earth. There are many creation stories, many interpretations of human nature. But this one's contained in a ceramic jug inscribed with the names of the founding fathers of Judaism. And whether we still pray to long dead saints or pour away the wine of another age, sediment remains, clinging to the sides of the empty jug.
And now our last reader for the night, and thank you to the bar lady. I'm very sorry we've gone over time. That's really my fault, so sorry about that. Welcome up, please, Christy Parker.
Thank you. I won't debate the barmaid either for a long time, I'm sure. I haven't been up here for about 6 months, I think. Paul said it was about a year, but that's wishful thinking. So it's about 6 months. So as I was saying, the poem that I'm going to read now was the last one that I read the last time that I was here. And it was a work in progress then, and wasn't that good really, to be honest about it. It was unfinished and it wasn't great, but I've rewritten it now and I finished it, and it's 20 times worse. Well, I'm going to read it because it's a poem about hope. It's a poem about never giving up. It's a poem about digging deep and finding a solution when there's a problem. It's a poem about self-belief that things will get better. It's a poem about struggling with disaster and tragedy and still hoping against all hope, against all the odds that you're going to come out on top. It's a poem about hope. Shall I read it? I burnt the toast again this morning. A wholemeal crisis without a warning, with Pat the Baker's high in fibre, cindered by a fickle timer. A fickle time where I had turned to bring me slices bronze, not burned, but having heard the toaster's rack, I turned to find they popped up black. They popped up black, my breakfast charred, not crisply crumbled, but deadly hard. My hunger roared to scrape and risk it. What reason argued, have a biscuit. Yes, have a biscuit, and instead evade despair with buttered bread beneath a layer of rhubarb jam. I'll cut my losing streak with ham. A losing streak, I fear I'm on. My uncle died the week just gone. Upon a roof, he sneezed and fell. You could say he was toast as well. Yeah, he was toast, just like my dog would chase a rabbit through a bog. And reaching an electric fence, he paused to pee. No, he's past tense. Yes, he's past tense, and more bad luck arrived last night when lightning struck. My wife's life ended in a flash. And then today my toast was ash. My toast was ash as those two slices plunged me into deeper crisis. The void of breakfast celebration, crust fallen by this cruel cremation. This cruel cremation so intent on hindering my nourishment must never be allowed to win. I vowed while reaching for a tin. And reaching for that tin I seared, an opening whence respite appeared, as beans came sliding in a blob into the pot upon the hob. Into the pot the beans I poured, I lit the jet, my spirit soared. The bean sauce rose, I heard it splutter, while I arranged the toast with butter. The toast with butter I arranged, then poured the beans, and all had changed. The hostile taste being nullified upon the plate with beans applied. With beans applied, the flackened wheat had now become a tasty treat, dispatched with reignited glee, along with steaming hot, strong tea.
Yes.
I can relate to that, can't I? You burned the toast as well? I burned the toast again this morning, a whole real crisis without warning. But rescue came by trusted means, with a pot of tea and a tin of beans. Thank you.
And with that, we will say thank you very much to everybody for taking part, especially to our guest poets, Peter Raynard and Jane Comey. Paul being alive and well, lads, take it home and bring it back with you next week.
Thank you.